Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. You know, everybody is caught up with this thing with the Treasury notes and the Treasury bills. But this story here on the front page about what happened down in St. Lucie yesterday at Harrison's is very disturbing. And I really think that Barbados needs to get some answers as to how we are going to cope with this situation in that part of the country, because it is well known that that's a hot spot, and the resources that are required to deal with it seem to be a bit limited given the traditional approach to St. Lucie, which was over the years a very peaceful neighborhood, a very peaceful parish. But things have changed down there markedly, or up there, and there is a need to seriously reassess it. This situation here where children were scampering and crying for their mothers and that sort of thing. I mean, the cricketers, the people officiating at the cricket games, they're not going back there. That's a major problem for the people who have invested in that area. What is really ironic about it is some of the most senior policemen over the years and even now come from St. Lucie, including the Commissioner of Police. This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
This is my first time calling.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you.
Okay, well, I'm at work right now, but I just want to take time out to thank each and every one that came to our assistance at Sherwood Circle Drive for Water Terrace Squish Dash.
You mean with the rain?
Yes, with all the flooding. Actually, I'm a resident that lives there. So I just want to thank our representatives, Mr. Renstrom, the Honourable Prime Minister Mayor Motley, the Marshall, the CBC, the Nation, and the Royal Barbados Police Force.
Tell me about the recovery now. What has happened since?
Well, actually, nothing really happened since, but we have to wait and see what's going to happen. But it's normally wells and the drainage. And this is not the first time water has been flooding.
So how badly affected were you?
It was horrible in me because it was during the nighttime, and like the rain started falling, and it's like a circle. And the water settled in a circle, and the only way in is through like a boat or like, you know.
How much damage did you have?
But actually, I didn't really handle the damage because the water just came up to the ground still. But all the rest on the area, they had a lot of damages and things. But it's real horrifying.
Yeah, because what we need to get from some of those people now is, you know, how have they been affected since then? I mean, if water went in your house and that sort of thing, it's not the first time.
It's not the first time.
Other issue is how do they deal with insurance? I mean, since you know that you're in a flood-prone area, do you get insurance? And if you have no insurance, then what? I mean, you can anticipate that with the weather being what it is and climate change and all these systems coming off the Atlantic, that it is quite possible that we are going to have more of that.
Yes.
Therefore, how do you deal with it?
Well, we just go hope and pray, as I say, that the drain is clean and the well is clean, and we just gonna pray because, as I said, it's not the first time, right? But this time was kind of cause we get a lot of attention from the media. Like, maybe we had it before, we just let run off and that is it.
Okay.
But this time is different, so I just want to thank each and every one, especially Defense Force. You know, they put their, there was magnificent. I mean, it was like horrible, you know. It was a horrifying experience. So I just hope and pray that let's get clean drainage and anything else that it won't, you know. I can't say it will happen again because it will happen again if you get a lot of rain. I say it's a circle. It just started, water started, and we have to wait like 2 or 3 hours to actually run off.
Well, I thank you very much for taking the time to come and express your gratitude to the people who assisted you. Thank you very much. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hi, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
Yeah, good to hear you, sir. I'm on a speakerphone. You can hear me okay?
Yes.
Good. If you start losing me, let me know. I would take it off. But I want to make I want to pitch to the Democratic Labor Party. I want to make a pitch to them, and then I want to make a pitch to the government relative to this, in particular, the recent gasoline increases. If you don't mind indulging me for a short while. So I'm saying to the Democratic Labor Party, I heard Mr. Sandy Fergano a few days ago, a week ago, whatever, indicating that there will be coming to the public more, a lot more, in an attempt to try to explain a lot of things to the public that they believe they should be made to understand about. So I want to say to them, I want them to hurry up and start to do it, start to bring those. There are a lot of government supporters, a lot of diehards that want to continue to make this country their supporters in this country believe that the Democratic, only everything that happened, everything bad happened to this country in the last 10 years, and it is only Democratic, and the Democratic Party was solely responsible. And people who read and understand and look at international affairs and those kind of things would know better. And I am saying that I am calling on the Democratic Party to come out and speak to the public where every opportunity and try to nullify or debunk some of the nonsense that is being spoken and spread through, in particular, this forum, your forum, and other places. But in particular, I'm talking about VOB. It's too much blaming of the last government and in the past 10 years. And it must be explained. What I'm saying, it can be explained. I know that individuals, many individuals in the party can explain what happened and in a logical form to people. And I'm saying those who can best do it, like I believe the former finance minister, Mr. Stinkler, whoever else, come and try to dismiss this nonsense talk by people like the Cassava Man and
all right. Let me just give you a piece of news here that I don't know how you will react to it, but I am very reliably informed that Barbados's Economic Recovery and Transformation Plan was approved by the International Monetary Fund Board at 11 o'clock this morning. And this has been done in 3.5 months, which is considered to be a relatively short period for a country like Barbados to be able to get through such a program. So I believe that's the kind of information that will be met with some measure of relief by some, because you needed to have this program consolidated in a relatively short period so that you could avoid drawing out the period of uncertainty. But of course, with it comes the pressure and the hardship that people have been complaining about, especially pensioners who are affected by the reduction in interest and the drawing out of the repayment of principal.
Right. So I'm glad to hear, Mr. Ellis, that some money is coming, and that's a start, okay? I don't want to go after the government hard and fast way at this point in time, relative to some of what they are doing. I am just saying to the Democratic Labor Party not to let individuals get away with talking foolishness, trying to convince the public of nonsense. Come and explain and let the people know and explain as regularly as you can what happened and how it happened and why we found ourselves where we found ourselves by 2008-9. It didn't just start in 2008-9. Dr. Eswick, I remember, did his utmost best to try to explain how we were deteriorating, and he did it he did it by projecting it on a projector with graphs and all kinds of things, and showing the decline back in the 2000s. He was showing it all along while he was shadowing that ministry. So I am saying the information is there, the trend is there. Let it be known. Don't let people continue with nonsense talk. So I don't want them to be political. I don't want to come and start to be political in opposition and to be in opposition against the government. I just want them to just to debunk this, some of the nonsense that is said relative to the last government. as we try to go forward in this country.
All right, sir.
So I'm going to pitch to them, but I want to pitch to the bees, right? You listening?
I'm listening to you.
Good. So I am saying that relative to that, I'm saying that, those gas increases or recent increases have been very painful, okay? And instead, they're pitching that drivers, people who drive on the road more, will pay more. And that is a fact, you know, taxi drivers, PSVs, and a whole lot of different areas, and particularly those first two, could tell you a lot about it, how it is hurting them very badly in the pocket. And I am saying that right now, they've had 2 months, roughly about 2 months, I think, in terms of the increases that have come on. And by now, they will have a picture. There's no more speculation. They will have a picture as to how much money those increases are making, have been making over that period of time. So there's a trend now. If they are making overly more than if you find, when you look at the finances, and their finances way beyond what they were projecting, then, you know, you don't want to give back all the assets. But what I'm saying to you, I'm saying to give back some relief to some of the suffering small business, black business people in this country who have gone into business, the taxi business.
Well, you didn't tell the Democratic Labor Party to do that over the last 10 years. When they were taxing us every year, why you didn't tell them to give back to those same people who were crying out?
Mr. Ellis, this is a different dispensation we are into right now.
Okay, so because it's different, all the more reason why you need to tell us why you never told the Democratic Labor Party to do that.
They were forced to increase many taxes, and I you know, it hurt.
So you don't think that this government has been forced to increase taxes as a means of trying to get to secure a deal with the International Monetary Fund in 3.5 months?
I think that this part has gone, have gone after the poor man, the small man, in a dramatic way, in a vindictive way, especially against the public sector vehicles. And those guys.
Vindictive. You know that you're clear and distinct bias in favor of the Democratic Labor Party may well be influencing you to use that term vindictive, because there's a person who may be listening to us now from the Barbados Labor Party perspective who could come and with equal force say that the Democratic Labor Party was equally vindictive or even more vindictive in its taxation policies. So we are left with a position where you can find people from both camps holding that position. What is the reality?
Mr. Ellis, you're with me, right?
So I'm listening to you.
I want to say, I know you're very good at what you do, so I'm trying to stay focused. And
You're pelting your jabs in along the way. I mean, you describe it as being vindictive and that sort of thing. I mean, you know, you know that's provocative stuff.
Let me bring you home to what I'm saying. I'm saying that, like, okay, this is relative to taxi operators, owners, who have tried to become small business people in this country by owning a little that are...
Somebody said that you're really trying to trick us, because you began by saying that you weren't going to be political, but you can't help it. You can't help it. When I hear your voice, I know what to expect.
Let me finish what I'm saying. I'm trying to talk about this hurtful increases in recent...
Look, but let us understand the context in which Barbadians have had to go through it. The context that you do not want to accept is that the government has inherited a very difficult situation. And I dare say that there are many Barbadians, including those who are hurting, who are prepared to give the government a chance to implement the program, recognizing that the first order of business was to secure a deal with the International Monetary Fund as a means of trying to stop the rot. So people are going to be in a situation where things are tougher. We all are.
Right, so I
isn't just the taxi man.
I understand accept the challenges. I accept that this government has a big a job on their hands. But what I don't accept...
So what makes it vindictive?
When everything wants to be blamed on the last government...
No. You can say that. But what makes it vindictive?
Let me tell you what makes it vindictive in my view. So I am saying to you, you there said that they would abolish the payment of road tax across the board. Initially, to the public, they would have abolished it. And yet, how could you abolish something and still you find taxi operators still have to pay half? And still, they're still going to pay inspection and renewing the permits. So how could you abolish it?
Let me ask you this question. The definition of vindictive is having or showing a strong or unreasoning desire for revenge. Why would you want to exact revenge on those people? What were they doing that would cause anybody to want to be vengeful towards them?
You're saying it's a typical Barbados Liberal Party tactics. It's not the condition defined with seven. It's typical Barbados Liberal Party operations.
But in other words, you cannot reasonably back up any charge of the administration being vindictive to any one group of people in the country.
But I'm telling you that the taxes, the increases in the gas prices and gasoline and whatever, and the diesel and whatnot, have increased operators have gone.
Yeah, we accept that. We accept that there would have been increases and people are going to have some difficulties.
And I'm saying to you, and when you got that coupled with the fact that you could not even take off the whole taxes, the road tax and whatnot on the operators, you won't say half, you know. So you're double whammy against these fellas. Half plus 4 or 5 times the increase in gasoline prices for the average operator. No, you can't save any money by the time, you know.
I mean, the government is also, this is in relation to ZRs or just taxi operators you're talking about?
Similar thing for ZRs, for public sector vehicles I'm talking about. I was looking mainly at taxis, but
okay. All right, well, you've had a chance to express your point of view. So let's get some other perspectives on this and the other challenges that we face in the country at the moment, reminding you that we've been reliably informed that the IMF has given the nod to the Barbados Restructuring Program, Economic and Restructuring and Transformation Program, better known as BERT, and that approval was given around 11 o'clock this morning. But I expect that the government itself will say more about it, confirming it and expanding on it. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, good morning. I want to make, while savings bonds are not part of the restructuring exercise, I have a concern.
Why?
Let me explain what I'm saying. I can understand why they're not part of the restructuring exercise, but you know, one can take savings bonds at any time in any commercial bank and they'll be cash in normal times. Right? No. What will happen now? Given the state of the government finances, will the commercial banks be prepared, I doubt very much, to cash savings bonds as they did in the past? That's my concern.
That they will have a greater difficulty cashing the savings bonds?
Now, naturally, if government finances are as dire as they are, I mean, it's very unlikely that when I take a savings bond to a commercial bank and they cash it for me, that they can recoup their funds from the central bank or whatever. That's what I'm saying. I don't know. In fact, some years ago, I don't know if this.
But hold up. Isn't that also dependent upon other things that are happening in the economy? For instance, the very IMF agreement having been arrived at and stuff like that. I mean, at the end of the day, what you're looking for is a restoration of confidence, and you also have to correct the imbalances that exist in the way that the government, with respect to government's cash flow. So a number of measures are being taken, which, if nothing else happens, then what you say is quite possible. But if other steps are being taken to correct the situation, then the commercial banks can also have a greater degree of confidence. And what you're saying may not happen in the way that you anticipate.
No, but it's a concern, really, because it must be a concern, given the present situation. And in fact, there's not much we have to say, but we don't have the time. And first of all, that's how the agreement was signed, right, with the IMF, right? I want to say this to you. I would like them to tell us we've been hearing all along about a 1% interest rate. And what I would like to know is what is the upfront fee, because I cannot see any financial institution that has to go to the capital market to borrow money, lending people at 1%. And IMF raises its money from quotas and also from...
The IMF situation, as you have heard it articulated time and time again, is that it was the only place
But listen to me, Mr. Ellison, to my point. I'm saying that if somebody tells me, I'm a banker by training and profession, if somebody tells me, for example, that they're lending money at me at 1%, I will have a concern because the IMF raises money from quotas and also from IMF and the World Bank. They raise money by bond issues in the capital markets of the world. They have to pay their bondholders interest. They have substantial costs for a lot of these people who came down here all the time. That all that costs, substantial costs. So tell me, how can you charge somebody 1%? But there's a catch here, because I read years ago, 30 years ago, I remember one guy wrote about it. What they do, they say it's a low interest rate. We know where to get back the money and high upfront fee. That's what I want to hear. I want to hear from the authorities. What will be the upfront fee? What will be the cost? And there's a fee for restructuring. All of that. I would like them to tell us that. So don't come and tell me that it's 1% on that about an institution. That's nonsense to me. If that an institution that raises money has so much high cost, high salary people can charge somebody 1%. It's nonsensical to me. That's right.
We're going to the regional roundup next. Welcome to the program.
Mr. Ellis, a blessed day to you, sir.
And to you as well.
Thank you kindly. I trust that you and your family had a beautiful weekend, and the nation as well.
Same to you.
Thank you kindly. Mr. Ellis, now, I have said more than once that the government that's in office is my government, and I will support them, because if they go up, our nation go up, and I do as well. And if we go down, we all go down. But I will not allow that as well to stop me from being concerned and be critical of things that I believe, in my view, that I ought to be. Now, I am consistently hearing that the government has met the condition of the IMF in record time. 3 months and days or whatever. But okay. I am refusing to hear those who are saying that also connect it up with that those conditions that were met were with draconian measures in taxes that was dumped on our backs as well in order...
All right. I want you to stick a pin, because I need to get some information to the public firsthand. And it does touch on this very issue that you are raising, the fact that Barbados and the International Monetary Fund have signed an agreement today for, I think it was $290 million U.S. dollars in support. I have on the line Professor Avinash Prasad, who is, as you know, advisor to Prime Minister Mia Amor-Motley. And Professor Prasad, tell us exactly where you are right now.
Good afternoon, David.
Well, good afternoon.
At 11 a.m. today, the board of the IMF, the executive board, approved the Barbados Economic Recovery and Transformation Plan, approved their backing and supporting of it, as you said, with the $200 million U.S. dollar funding that will come with that approval. And of course, that approval, their approval at the board, triggers automatically a number of other development partners, like the European Development Bank and the Inter-American Development Bank, bringing in further funds as well. So in total, there'll be some $1 billion Barbados dollars backing this plan. But this plan is about Barbados becoming fiscally fit, being self-sufficient, and over a fairly rapid period of time, not requiring any support externally.
So what's the next step after this now?
We, as you know, are still in the middle of our debt exchange. That's one of the components. There are three unique aspects about this plan that makes it distinctively Barbadian. Of course, we have also managed to achieve the plan in 3.5 months from the first phone call to Madame Lagarde to the executive board agreeing, which is almost a record. And you can imagine Prime Minister Motley really drove that process. There are three unique aspects of our plan that make it a Barbadian plan. And the primary one is that the burden is shared as much as possible. You've heard many hands make like work a few times, but we've had to raise taxes, and we've had to raise taxes because if we didn't, we'd have to have a very large amount of job losses, and we are going to have expenditure cuts. So sharing that burden, completing the debt recovery, and then going full speed into the growth strategy, and you know, notice with this plan, we have always safeguarded investments in education and skill. And actually, we're putting more resources towards that, because ultimately, you can't get out of your problems without growth. So this recovery plan and transformation plan puts us on a platform. It stabilizes the economy. We are no longer sliding. Our reserves are increasing. A big boost to our reserves. That's the platform. And then we have to build from there towards growth.
Take this question from this caller, because just before we put you on the line, he was raising a question about the draconian measures that accompany this 3.5 month near record agreement being signed. Caller, are you there? I don't know if he's still there.
I did hear what he said.
You heard what he said, yes. Good.
And I mean, I think the first thing to say is that there is no sweet tasting medicine. I think we all know that there has to be a significant adjustment. We had a lost decade, a decade of kicking the can down the road, and now things are much more difficult to rectify today from where we are.
But let me put this to you, Professor Prasad. It seems as though, yet again, we're talking about our homegrown plan. It seems as though we sought to put things in place to make sure that we could speed up this process of getting the agreement signed. Prior to this, former Prime Minister Owen Arthur, when the Democratic Labour Party had put together their last program, said that it was more draconian than what the IMF had been asking of Barbados. Now, on top of what that was done then, we have these additional measures which have been imposed, and that will raise the question of the extent to which Barbados may have bent over backwards to please the IMF to make sure that you got this program in record time. But to what extent are you more draconian than if the IMF had imposed the plan in a different way? That's the question.
Okay, there are quite a few things in that. Let me try and unpack it, at least from my understanding. I think a key thing here is credibility. If you have a plan that has no credibility, you have to work so much harder to earn that credibility. And I think one of the challenges that we had over the past 10 years is that we had lost international credibility. An objective measure of that is that our credit rating had collapsed to one of the lowest levels in the world, on par with Venezuela and Zimbabwe. So from that position, for you to try and adjust with no credibility, you would have to be extremely draconian and far more draconian than we've ended up being. So we have a plan that the IMF has looked at and said, you know what, this is a credible plan. This is a plan that adds up. This is a plan is so much that it adds up and we support it that we're happy to put some money of our own money into this plan. So that means that we're actually being less coping because we have a credible plan. And because the plan is credible and they're putting their money into the plan, it also allows us to be less draconian. The reality is, where we were, there was no sweet-tasting medicine. And indeed, whilst taxes have gone up, they would have gone up far more had we not had a credible plan with the boosting from the fund. And had we not shared this burden between taxes, international taxes as well as local taxes, and expenditure cuts. It's uniquely shared. So everyone is walking this tough walk, hiking this tough hike. It is a shared burden. But if we did not share it, it would have been far worse.
When are we likely to get the first drawdown?
We get the first drawdown, in fact, in a matter of days on the back of the approval. And then we have quarterly assessments to see that whether we are sticking to our own plan, and there will be drawdowns with those assessments.
And this will be at what rate of interest?
I don't have that in front of me, but when the IMF lends to you, it has extremely low rates of interest. It's the region of 1% or so. But I'm not reading that directly off. But the one of the reasons why you go after IMF money, and you can only get it if you've got a credible plan, is that no one will lend you money as cheaply as they will.
And other negotiations, I understand that today we are also talking with the World Bank.
So you've pulled me out of a meeting where the entire team is there, and let me point out that this whole plan, let's be very clear here, we're here because of the Prime Minister, and she really drove this, and there's an economic team, of which I'm just one member of, who really have helped to get us here. But when you've got the credibility of an IMF plan behind you, other people are prepared to lend, and lend at concessionary rates. The IDB have already come up to the table. The CDB have come up to the table, and the World Bank, for whom we have not been able to borrow from for the past 20-odd years, have said that they want to listen to what we're doing and see whether there's a way in which they can also be part of our plan.
So that's where those discussions are today.
So they brought in a mission, extensive mission. We're talking about things like how do we make Barbados climate resilient? How do we make sure that our social safety nets are tighter and stronger? And how do we make sure that our government is much more efficient and is more online to make things move quicker and cheaper, and we don't have to spend time hanging out in government offices? And we have a much we are in an encouraging environment, because let me end with the point that we need growth, and to get growth, people have to want to invest in the country, put their money down, and they're not going to do that if we have a very inefficient planning system, government system, tax system, etc.
You said the 3.5 months is near record in terms of being able to get an agreement signed. Who's got the record, and how far away were we?
Well, I think it depends how difficult what they were doing was. So, and how much was the emergency? In terms of the size of our adjustment from 170% of debt to GDP down to a long run of 60%, the size of that adjustment, 3.5 months, probably is the record, perhaps only beaten by Greece, where the Europeans, of course, came in and backed Greece as a member of the European Union, and they brought the IMF along with that, and that their first plan took about 3.5 months. Their second plan took much longer.
In such circumstances, what's the norm for these plans being worked out?
Between 9 to 10 months.
And between 9 to 10 months?
9 to 10 months, and sometimes as long as a year and a half.
Okay, you've got to get back into that meeting with the World Bank, so please proceed. But thank you very much for coming out and updating Barbadians on this most important development.
Thank you very much.
Professor Avinash Prasad. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Hello, you ready, Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. I guess he didn't hear because...
He heard what you said.
Pardon? Yeah.
He heard what you said and responded to it.
No, he didn't. He didn't. Because let me say this to you, that
it is heralded all the time about the record. But it is not heralded that the amount of taxes are the greatest taxes and the most that this country has ever been heralded on the people. In order, because I'm saying, no, Mr. Ellis, don't get me wrong. If you are going to speak about one record, there has to be another one that coincides with that.
But the only, let me say to you that the record that you are speaking about would then have to be taken in this context. When you add this to the taxation that we had over the period that the Democratic Labour Party was in office, that's what combined took us to what you see as this record.
There's a complete difference.
What's the difference?
But let me explain to you. If the Democratic Labour Party had imposed taxes, they were not as draconian as this one.
I said just now in the interview with Professor Persaud that none other than Mr. Owen Arthur, the former Prime Minister, accused the Democratic Labour Party of imposing measures in their last program that were more draconian than what the IMF was going to impose. And he's the economist, not you.
Wait, you mean the last budgetary proposals? Are you talking about the overall thing?
The overall thing. The last major set of measures that the Democratic Labour Party imposed were described by Mr. Arthur as more draconian than what the IMF would have imposed. And that is when he said that Barbados should have gone to the IMF.
But let me ask you.
You remember that? Do you remember hearing that?
I heard him say, but could those have been what has now happened? Can't be.
I don't understand where your response is.
My response is that these that has just been introduced are far more harsher than those that the Democratic Party has introduced.
Well, the response that you got from Professor Persaud is that your credit rating had collapsed.
Yeah,
and basically, your scenario could have been far worse in these circumstances.
But let me ask you something. How come he nor the Prime Minister, up to now, has not told Barbadian the volume of job losses that are going to take place? You know what they say, Mr. Prime Minister? I certainly, it's not going to be 40%, it's going to be less than that. And you can tell me that you're introducing measures, but you can tell Barbadians you don't know how much you can get laid off. But you know everything else. You know what you record. And you think that they can fool Barbadians with that kind of talk, that they don't know how many people out there are going to send home? Mr. Ellis, you swallow that?
I want you to respond to this. Don't worry about why you swallow or don't swallow. I want you to respond to this. Congrats to the Prime Minister and government for driving this process to complete the program with the IMF. Question or clarification, are the new personal income taxes meant to be permanent or is there a projected time frame attached to them? This might have been mentioned before. But I may have missed it. I don't think it was spoken of before.
I neither. Anyway, let me just mention.
This is what the person says, though. This person goes on to say, very happy, not like you. I feel we are now going to be moving forward.
Well, let me ask you this. How come that person say they are happy and the cries of the nation is as they are? I mean, come on. You know what was very ridiculous about all this thing, Mr. Ellis?
So you expected to be able to achieve this without sacrifice?
But I'm saying to you, so how is it possible that when Barbadians are complaining that there are those who are saying they should not be complaining?
That to me is not terribly important. What I want you to tell me is whether, given the situation in Barbados, the economic situation, how else do you believe we could have done this without pain and sacrifice?
Ms. Ellis, I am not, Mark, listen to me. I am not saying to you, neither have I made mention that Barbadians ought not to make a sacrifice.